If you like podcasts about vanity and projects, you've come to the right place. Your podcast app, this is so shit. Every week, James, every week I'm like, just say the intro like a normal person. And then a little voice in my head is like, jazz it up, spice it up, do something interesting. I'm panicked. I'm starting again. Hello. Nope. That wasn't even my first attempt. The very first one I did, I had a mouthful of hot cross bun. Look, it's episode 14. You know what you're in for. It's a show about music from people that don't normally make music. Welcome, okay? It's all very funny. I messed up the intro again. We're all adults here. Let's move on.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck you for tuning in. How dare you?
No, it's just you press record and I just wasn't quite prepared. God, we're professionals.
Do you want to say who you are and who I am?
Absolutely nailed this. Are you sure you don't want me to start again?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I'm Bridie Connell, a highly professional, decorated writer and actor. And the other voice of that mean bully you can hear belongs to James Colley, an even more highly decorated and much funnier writer than I am. He's a legend, and we are the co-hosts of Vanity Project, the podcast that you're listening to right now.
There we go. Smooth as silk. Our album today is Jennifer Love Hewitt's Let's Go Bang, which was released in 1995 through Atlantic Records. It is one of a lot of Jennifer Love Hewitt albums, but this
is so many.
The one to start on. Now, firstly, the first thing I want to bring up this album before we get to anything else, because I feel like with an album entitled Let's Go Bang, written by and performed by a 16-year-old, and we have been over here too many times with the Bacon Brothers, among others, looking at you. There's a great legacy section on the Wikipedia for this article, and I feel we need to get this out of the way. Yeah. For many years, audiences misinterpreted the meaning of going to bang and took it as sexual innuendo. In the 2005 interview with Maxim, Hewitt was asked to elaborate on the meaning of the song. It was supposed to be this dance called the bang, and the song never hit, so we never came up with the dance.
I think if you were trying to create, you know, a viral dance craze, you got to start with the dance and work backwards. You've got to reverse engineer that. That's a mistake they've made. In another interview, she said, the bang was supposed to be a big dance in clubs, like the Macarena, but slightly cooler. But no one was interested.
No, this isn't a sex thing. This is just my new song, Let's Go Fuck. And it comes with a dance called The Fuck. And that's normal, right?
You think about it, right? The Macarena, it's clear in the video what the dance moves are. The Ketchup song, it's clear. The Locomotion, the instructions are in the lyrics. You know, like, you can make a dance craze of a song, but you gotta be on the front foot with it. Literally, sometimes.
And I will say, even if you have a dance move, let's say you do Nutbush City Limits to this tune and you say that's the bang, it's still an innuendo. You're still calling it. You can't go, no, you misinterpret it. When I say let's go bang, bang is how I refer to putt-putt, the most wholesome activity I can imagine. Like, you're still making an innuendo.
100%. Also, look, it's not important in the scheme of everything that we're talking about, but let's go bang without any sort of punctuation mark at the end. Like, I feel like a question mark or an exclamation mark is what we need after this
or
title.
Both. Let's go in terror bang. That's one for you grammar heads out there.
Oh, perfect. I really enjoyed that. We will get to that title track when we talk about the songs themselves, but we did think important to get out of the way straight up top that, yes, it's a 16-year-old with a song and an album that has a new endo in it, but that's just get your mind out of the gutters. It's not what she was intending.
Yeah, it's a dance. It's a famous dance that I do all the time.
Okay, we get it.
I didn't mean it that way. You've misinterpreted what I was saying as an innuendo.
So Jennifer Love Hewitt, let's talk about her. James, I know you are one of her biggest fans.
Do you know what? There was a period of time where she is the prime Jennifer. Like, if you're talking about Jennifer, you are talking about Jennifer Love Hewitt. This is before the Lawrence, before the Lowe's. Like, she was, like let's say, Sister Act 2, Party of Five, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Of course, the Smash Mouth video clip, I Can't Get Enough of You, Baby.
She's the baby. Forgetting the Garfield movies?
I'm never forgetting the Garfield movies. The Garfield movies that allegedly Bill Murray signed up to because it's done by a Joel Coen and he thought it was one of the Coen brothers' Coens.
That's a fantastic piece of movie trivia. Thank you very much for that.
Could be a lie.
Could be a lie, but let's choose to believe that it's the truth. Yeah, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sister Act 2, one of the greatest films ever made, is the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Jennifer Love Hewitt. She has done so much. I didn't quite realize how early her career started. She really was so young. She was in a whole bunch of commercials as a kid.
Disney Illuminati, as we've often talked about.
Yeah, it's funny the things that keep coming up time and time again with these vanity projects, isn't it? But it's interesting to note as well that she saw herself having a musical career rather than an acting career, and she had moved to the big smoke to pursue music instead of acting, which surprised me because although I knew she was in Sister Act 2, I think of her as an actor. I'm thrilled right off the bat, no spoilers. This is one of the best vocal performances of any Vanity Project we've had, but we'll talk about that when we get there. While we're on the subject of talking about, you know, Jennifer Love Hewitt, not just as an actor, but having, like, released like four albums and doing a whole bunch of things. Some other musical facts that you might not know about Jennifer Love Hewitt. She was, as a child, she was in the music video and was a backup singer for the song Toy Soldiers tune. And also in 2001, much later on, she was in the music video for the Enrique Iglesias song Hero. Which, as soon as I read that, I had to go and like watch the video. What a thrill!
She's the person to which he will be a hero. Ugh. She is again the baby. Jennifer Love Hewitt has been the baby in so many songs.
It's quite an impressive CV. Like by the time she's even 20 years old, she's got more credits than most actors and musicians get in the rest of their lives.
Also, I was of the opinion that her career ended, and that is a mistake. It is still very much going, just on like the kind of, say, procedurals and shows that I might not necessarily watch. But she has been performing right up until the current day in shows that are, like, I remember Ghost Whisperer having its time.
I remember Ghost Whisperer. I loved it.
I have a differing opinion, but The Client List, Criminal Minds, like shows that have prestige and stuff. Like Jennifer Love Hewitt is still Jennifer Love Hewitt. This is not a forgotten act by any means.
It's actually what I tell people about my career. My career has not stopped at all. I'm actually in heaps of shows. You just don't know about them. Like, you are just not watching the shows that I'm definitely the lead role of. They exist. You know why I was obsessed with Ghost Whisperer? And it's not because, if anybody listened to our episode a couple of weeks ago, it's not because I am a Ghost Whisperer and currently am rooming with a ghost. It's because I thought when, I don't know how old we would have been when Ghost Whisperer came out, pretty young, I thought her character had the most beautiful hair I'd ever seen. And I was like, wow, she's just so beautiful to look at. And that is literally all I remember about the show. Just thinking like, that woman is goals, which, to be honest, I stand by.
That's actually what Ghost Whisperer is about. To maintain her hair, she had to take the souls from the living.
Now, you say that as a joke, but I would watch that show.
That does sound like a good show. What do you think of her as a musician? Because I have to say, like, my memory of this is the, like, single Bare Naked, which got an insane run. And I was like, it's fine. Like, it's in this wheelhouse. It doesn't seem like someone who shouldn't be doing this, let's say.
Yeah.
It's also one of those songs that if you had equally told me it was a Nelly Furtado song or anyone of that ilk, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I didn't necessarily know it was Jennifer Love Hewitt, which can be a good thing in these Vanity projects, because
absolutely,
when you can blend into just a singer on the radio, you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting you say that, because when we go through the tracks, like, it's interesting to sort of hear other musical influences from the time coming through. kind of was just, you know, if it was around the time of Sister Act, I was sort of expecting, yep, just teen poppy goodness. Certainly wasn't expecting an album called Let's Go Bang.
Yep. I just expecting a bit of Lauryn Hill.
Which would be a great addition to any album. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I similarly was like, oh, I can't really remember what her voice sounds like from Sister Act 2, but if she was in Sister Act 2, then she must be good. So I didn't have any worry or stress going into this album. I will say, though, this is the second vanity project we've done by a 16-year-old recording artist, and I don't think it could be more different from Brie Larson's album.
Absolutely.
They are different 16-year-olds.
Also, this is somehow 16-year-old, her second album, because she has also did an album at 12 called Love Songs, which was released exclusively in Japan. It is, like, it's poppier, it's fun music, but, and I think we should get to it at some point, but the thing that was sticking with me there is it feels incredibly funny to see a 12-year-old's idea of what love is and how it works. Because you feel that... I remember, like, you know, the Year 6 farewell and the heartbreaks that happened all around there, mm-hmm. with all of us in our Hawaiian Golo formal shirts. You know, these were heady times.
Very much. Very much so. And that's why I always think, like, so much of what we are fed from pop culture, be it, you know, American teen movies or, you know, any of that stuff, which was definitely a big part of my pop culture diet growing up. Mm-hmm. I always watching them was like, what happens in America that is so different to adolescence in mm-hmm. the mid-noughties in rural New Zealand? Because I don't feel like we are having the same amount of drama that they are having. And I felt a little bit ripped off.
Yep, absolutely. Shall we get into our tracks now?
Yes, please.
So our first track is not Let's Go Bang. It is entitled A Kiss Away From Heaven. If you Away From Heaven, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Let's Go Bang. Bridie, what do you reckon?
I don't want to intimidate you with my coolness. I know it's a risk that I run every time we jump on this mic, right? It will probably surprise no one to learn that I memorized all the choreography of Sister Act 2 as a child, not like something that I did now, but I watched the movie so much as a kid and I learned all the dances and all the songs. When I heard this song, I was like, oh, yeah, that totally fits into that world. It fits mm-hmm. all the dance moves. It's so 90s. It's so fun. The production is great. And then I was like, hold up. After hearing that track, then I went and looked at how old she was when she released it. So the first time I heard this, I didn't realize she was still a teenager, because it's a really assured opening to an album. It's very 90s, fun. Yeah, what did you think?
I feel about the same. You're right. It could be in the scene where they clean up the music room and set it up so it looks nice. They're taking some pride in their classroom. I think that would fit very well. I also memorized Frank K's rap from Joyful Joyful.
Yes. We were destined to be friends.
But no, I think you're right. This is like, when this started off, I'm like, oh, we're in for something here. This is not straight out of PE or whatever the hell that was. Like, you're right, this sounds like something that was destined to be as big an album. Like, this is 1995 as well. This is not that played out yet. Like, this is pre-Spears, you know? I feel like this genre has a before and after Spears, and this is before BS, before Spears.
I also alluded to it before, but I did listen to the song and go, wow, this might be already from track one, like one of the most confident vocalists we've had on Vanity Project so far. And it shouldn't be as refreshing as it is, but she's a good singer. She really is. So I feel like after this first track, I'm like, okay, I feel like we're in safe hands. And then we immediately have the song, Let's Go Bang. Yeah, yeah. Let's go bang. I wanna go bang. Let's go bang.
That's Let's Go Bang, song and dance that we all know and love. It's amazing how quickly, particularly from the intro, you go from like, oh, this is going to be really fun. Okay.
Yep. Can you talk us through that journey?
It was really, honestly, I was listening to this while going for a walk with like my daughter and my dog, and like I'm walking along and I'm listening to this, the Can't Read Crew, and like suddenly had this is not appropriate for me to be listening to. This was already a strange choice of genre for me to wander around with, but this is not appropriate. It's so you're a choreographer, Bridie. You have choreographed.
I have in the past, yes.
I just want to once again, because I get that there are a lot of producers involved in this. There is a big label. Mm-hmm. This isn't an indie project. Is there any way you could choreograph the song Let's Go Bang in a way that is actually innocent and it's all of our fault?
I mean, I'm sure that you could, but my issue is like, if you, like, you talk about dance moves, like if I said the robot or like the whatever, I can't think of any dance moves, but we know what they refer to, right? Or the Macarena. Mm. But if I was like, do you want to do the bang? No one's first instinct is going to be that it is a dance. They'll think I'm propositioning them. And I just think it is such weird territory.
Also, like the phrase, let's go bang and I want to go bang, makes up about 95% of the song. They're very persistent on this message.
100%. Also, the little vocal slide that she does in some of the choruses of it, I want to go bang, is very suggestive. And that's a choice. That's vocal phrasing choices, which I think you've got to be careful about. Now, again, in news that will surprise no one, I did rewatch High School Musical in the weekend just gone. What a great film. And there is some great choreography going on. But I just, in the context of listening to this album and watching that movie, which is also about a bunch of 16-year-olds, you know, in going through the turbulence of adolescence, I'm like, it's such a young, innocent age. These lyrics are not appropriate. And then I was like, am I a nana for thinking that? But I don't think I am. I think even if I was 16 and I was listening to this song, my mum or dad would have been like, maybe just skip to the next track.
I do feel like this reminds me of being like at school, like, you know, PE dance things, and having the teacher slowly realize what the lyrics to the Venga Boys, boom, 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 I want you in my room is about, and realizing like, well, it's too late to pull out of this now, so I guess we're just doing this.
Exactly. One of my favorite details about this song, though, is not to do with the title or the phantom dance moves that never existed. It's the fact that, like a lot of good songs, you know, we're having such a great time. Let's Go Bang is such a vibe. It's a very high energy, fun track to listen to, mm-hmm. if you don't listen to the lyrics, to be fair. But it's such a party, right? And she goes, one more time. And then the song goes for over another minute. Like, the chorus just repeats and repeats and repeats. It made me laugh.
Let's do the whole song one more time. I think my favorite takeaway from this is just this line hanging in the ether. So, like, most of the lines are fairly generic. You know, let the beat take you, let the blah, blah, blah. And then after you've said that about 9 times, it's very hard to find a new way to say, we're going to bang, which is a dance, by the way. So the line that they go with is, a groove premonition that your feet can't ignore. Groove premonition sounds like an incredible, like, electronic act that you find on Rage about 3 a.m.
Sounds like a Jamiroquai song or, like, the best ghost ever.
Well, that's what Ghost Whisperer is about. She's trying to find the ghost that knows the dance moves to Let's Go Bang.
I love that. Let's move on to our next track, which is The Difference Between Us.
That is The Difference Between Us, Jennifer Love Hewitt. I'm listening to Today FM Against My Will ass song.
100%. I was like, this is very like one of those compilation CDs that salons or like chilled cafes buy.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's something that we're going to get to a bit as we go on, but there are kind of three phases to this album and they go interchangeably. There is incredibly fun dance track. There is unbelievably boring song. And there is Audi Disney Princess.
Oh,
and
big time.
This fits solidly into the second, unbelievably boring to me. I give a fuck. You're like...
Yeah, I kind of agree. It's inoffensive, but maybe that's the most offensive thing about it. Let's move on to the next song. Couldn't Find Another Man. I'll remind you, a song performed by a 16-year-old. Let's go. If I had to fight for you, you know.
Is Couldn't Find Another Man, the post-credit song for Con Air.
Absolutely. You know what? There's a lot about this song that I like. The backup vocals in the chorus are a hell of a time. There's just a lot of like 90s cheese, synthy, yeah, gorgeous goodness in the song that I really like. But also, it just deeply reminded me of that feeling I had as a child when you'd finish the Disney movie and then they'd play like the pop star version of the main song. And I'd be like, why? Stop ruining Tale as Old as Time or A Whole New World. Just play the original one again. Like, that is what it sounds like to me. It's definitely post-credit song.
This is, this is where I'm like, oh God, this album's an act of attrition for me. Like, I was so high energy at the start, and I'm like, I am crashing. I need another coffee if I'm going to go through another track of this. The interesting bit of trivia to note is you couldn't find another man because they were all in prison, because they should not be contacting a child.
I thought about it. I'm like, it's so like such a mournful song for a 16-year-old to sing. Like, you know, I thought our love was everlasting. I knew this would all come down to a sad goodbye. I would see it through the tears in my eyes. Like, you set my heart on fire and fill my life with pain. I'm like, these are all feelings we have as 16-year-olds because everything is very black and white. But also I'm like, couldn't find another man. Every relationship I had when I was 16 was like 4 days long.
But like, it does feel like this. There's a bit of realism in there. It's like the most passionate. And, you know, there are major pop stars now that make incredible careers out of 3-week-long relationships. Like, these are big deals.
Now, one thing that I would highly recommend you check out, James, and everyone listening along, is the video to this song. When I say highly recommend, don't do it. I've regretted my choice of words immediately. Don't watch it. It's a black and white sort of 1940s-esque kind of noir-y jazz club. And there's like, thankfully, a much younger person in the lead role, but then just all these older men in the video. It's a weird time, but if you like cool black and white 1940s noir style videos, then you will love this.
Do they think it's Casablanca? Is that what's going on here?
Hey, James, guess what?
What?
You make me smile.
Okay.
That's the name of the next song.
You make me smile. Me never thinking that it could be so possible. Now on the other hand, it's
That's You Made Me Smile, Jennifer Love Hewitt. Now, this album is very, very quickly for me becoming karma for the Bacon Brothers album because I am so out. I'm so out. Oh, my God. This is music for a person with a fucking poster of a dolphin on their wall.
yeah, and what is wrong with that? look. Okay, I agree that it's not the most exciting album, right? I think a lot of the arrangements just seem like, a little bit, I don't want to say the word mature, but like, yeah, they are a little bit older than the vocalist singing them, but she's singing them so well. She's a really accomplished technical vocalist. She's really nice to listen to.
This is incredibly Audi Disney princess. Yeah. This is absolutely Audi Disney princess.
Her tone is great. Her phrasing is great. She's really good. I feel comfortable listening to her voice, but I just keep thinking, like, this is not the album that a 16-year-old makes, at least with Finally Out of PE by Brie Larson, which we didn't love. But I was like, but at least it's kind of authentically teenagery. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It speaks to... So, like, this feels like a play for the broader pop market. But I think that this is what I'm going to say, like, before Spears, before Britney, I don't know if we had that ground laid so well that you can write music for young people about young people. Mm. Like, a lot of the young people music are bigger, broader themes, even when it's, you know, Beatles or whoever. But, like, it's... I wonder if there's an element of, like, in the same way that James Dean invents the idea of the teenager, that what, like, the Britney revolution does is it changes this, like, young star pop to being about the people who are actually listening to it instead of being about the 45-year-old producer penning the track.
I think that's pretty astute. It just seems like a massive disconnect between the singer and the song, you know? Like, it's nice to listen to, but yeah.
Do you know, it really feels like you're watching someone you don't know do karaoke. And is there a more boring thing on earth than watching someone you don't know in a song that you don't know?
James, karaoke I don't know if I've told you this, but quick sidebar, because that's just reminded me of a beautiful memory that I have squirreled away in the back of my brain. A few years ago, I went to Fiji to see a friend of mine who was living there, and it was his birthday. And so we all went out on the town, and we had a great time, and we got to this bar, which was a karaoke / rugby bar, and I was like, this is great, like, here are two of my interests, what a vibe. And we went to this bar, and there was a stage where you would sing karaoke, and behind the, like, at the back of the stage was this giant screen, which was like which would screen like whatever game was on. Mm-hmm. And this particular night, it was like a Wallabies versus whoever it was. And I said to the bartender when I was getting a drink, I was like, why is the screen there where the karaoke is? And just so matter-of-factly, as you've just alluded to, he was like, oh, like, if your friend's singing, you support your friend. And if it's not your friend, you'll be bored, so you watch rugby.
Like, that's great.
You understand what is happening here perfectly.
Is this the same bar that you ended up singing Dolly and Kenny with a complete stranger doing
yes,
Islands in the Stream?
Like a wizened old beautiful man who I'd never met before. He just tapped me on the shoulder and was like, I like your voice. You will be Dolly and I will be Kenny. We're on in 3 songs time. And we got up and sang Islands in the Stream, and it remains one of my favorite memories.
That's beautiful. I will also say, a bar that does rugby union and karaoke are two versions of destroying a beautiful art with something not quite as good. All right, let's move on to the track In Another Life. That is In Another Life, the post-credits music for Snake Eyes. This actually has much more of a, like, this is one of those Disney straight to VHS, like, it's you know, it's not quite the level of Swan Princess, but it's somewhere in the grounds of, like, this is, you know, the magical toadstool, and this is the song that plays over the end.
Swan Princess, I forgot all about that movie, what a great time. This is an interesting one. I think her performance on this track is a little bit musical theatery. Would you agree? Like, it's very emotional and overwrought. She's a great vocalist. I'm really enjoying her voice. I've said it many times already. It's nice to listen to. If not, like, filled with emotion, it's just technically very competent, which I think is just such a nice change from some of the people we've had on this podcast, that I'm really loving that. But here's the thing. I assumed that when I became an adult, I would stop being scared of teenagers, right? I was scared of teenagers as a child. I was scared of teenagers when I was a teenager, but I'm still scared of teenagers, right? And so at first I listened to this track and I'm like, you're 16, lighten up, like so much heartache for a 16-year-old. Like, it's all good. It's going to be fine. But then I just went straight back into that thing of like, oh my God, does she know the things that I didn't know when I was 16? And like, oh God, oh, what was it? Oh man, oh, she's so much cooler than me, you know? And it just, I don't think it's ever going to go away.
Like you say, this is very well performed and it's fun. But who's doing her dirty here? Is it just that, like, we didn't know how to do this yet? Like, we didn't know what sort of thing she should be performing. Why is this happening? And why am I being subjected to it? I'm so bored.
Why is a 16-year-old slowly, mournfully singing to someone we don't know who? If only we met in another lifetime, things would be different. I'm like, you probably met Maths. It's fine.
This is, like, I don't want to harken on this point too much, but this is so much of a 90s action film where lead character dies at the end or whatever, and then this is the song that plays. It's like this song, then it's a Bryan Adams B-side.
Yes, and there's like a slow motion montage and heroically walking away from camera, all of that. It's very of the time, even again, like the production. There is no other decade that this album is from. Like, it's unmistakably 90s. If just all the layers that are going into it. You know what? I think we've talked a lot about, like, she's a really good singer and the arrangements are good and it's all good. But I'm like, I think the songs that kind of stick in your mind are not the ones where you go, goodness me, that chord change was technically inspired, or like that was such a proficient performance of that song. The songs that kind of have heart and authenticity and like mistakes are the ones that kind of capture our imagination more. It's all a little bit polished, I reckon.
Bridie is finding a very nice way to say this sucks and this is a bad time. Hey, Bridie, pop quiz,
yeah.
Without checking your notes, what is the name of any song since Let's Go Bang? That's what I thought. All right, let's move on.
You make me smile. Oh, too late. I missed it. God damn it. Here's a very excitingly titled song. Do you want to do the honors?
Yeah, this is the weirdest track on the album. And honestly, I was just staying on for this one. It's called The Garden.
At night, burnt by desire, I have reveled in no pain that is greater than love, nor have I found any garden more perfect. It stops.
That was The Garden.
What the hell? I feel like someone just cast a spell on us.
I feel like I'm starting a Dark Souls game on a PS2.
100%. That was like all the chimes in Hollywood are on this track.
What a weird. I guess it's an intro for, but like that's something you do, you know, track one. It's very weird to have this as a track seven intro into the next song. It's a strange poem, not hugely about a garden. It's very weird, Brady. And like
I don't know what it's a metaphor for, nor do I care to find out.
Just to reiterate, and I know this was a build-up to the next song, I'm out. All right.
I know you're out, but I want to continue torturing you after you making me listen to the Bacon Brothers. So let's play Can't Stand in the Way of Love.
That is Can't Stand in the Way of Love, one of the most 90s songs to ever be made. A song I do not hate. I think it's actually quite fun. But it's so funny that The Garden was the intro to this. Why did you need... Like, who was saying, like, oh, well, people aren't going to understand this. We need to put a weird poem and chimes over the top. So you get the feeling like you're entering a crystal shop in a rural town.
They bear no relation to each other whatsoever that I can discern. It's very funny to me. You know what? As I was listening to this song, I was reminded by the other mid-90s masterpiece that we have listened to on Vanity Project, which is the Naomi Campbell's 1995 album, Baby Woman. And I think it's fair to say that Jennifer Love Hewitt is objectively a much better singer. But there are definitely some like production similarities in this track to some of the ones on Baby Woman. Even though like this is a really pleasant experience to hear Jennifer Love Hewitt's voice, I would much prefer to listen to Baby Woman, because even though it's kind of warped, the lyrics are completely bizarre, at least it's kind of fun and funny and a bit more authentic. I don't know what I'm supposed to get from this.
Yeah, it's more interesting to be insane than competent. And that's like, I feel like my takeaway for this is she is competent. Like, this is fine. And also, like, I suppose in an era where you buy a CD, you have 3-4 tracks that you like, and the rest is just you're filling out the CD. Like, this, I don't think this was, like, built, obviously not built for a Spotify world, but built for a world where you're doing your listening experience. This is built to get her, you know, 3 singles that go up on MTV, which is still a factor in the musical world.
Yeah.
And everyone is dancing the Let's Go Bang for months afterwards. Like, I think that this is all filler, no killer. Like, there is a lot of filler in this album. And this is not one of those songs. Can't Stand in the Way of Love is a great, like, third single to come off of this.
Totally. But they all, when you say all filler, no killer, they're all the middle of the movie montage songs.
Yeah.
None of them are opening the movie. Yes. If that makes sense. Look, I'm going to compromise with you, James. I know you're out and you've been out for a while. There's 3 tracks to go. There's 4 tracks to go, actually. Let's do one more, which is the next song, because it's the only song that Jennifer Love Hewitt has a writing credit for on the album. So I want to listen to that, and then I will free you from this album. Deal?
I am thrilled, and let's get going. It's only my misogyny. I just fundamentally disagree with the premise of this. Actually, no, I would say, like, when I was listening to this, I was like, why didn't she write a bunch of the songs?
This is a really fun song. She's a good writer.
It's
a fun song.
It's got a fucking point of view. It's saying something. It's not the most amazing lyrics ever in the world.
Excuse me. I don't want no artificial sweeteners. I'm looking for a man to feed me limes. If you want to check out my body, well, first just show an interest in my mind. Elevates the entire art form of lyric writing. What are you talking about?
Hey, baby, you are so hot. I mean, sorry, you are so smart. Do you fancy a lime?
Yeah, to me, just the subject matter as well, like free to be a woman, it reminded me of that whole, like, not a girl, not yet a woman, like that whole precipice, right, of adulthood, but just with the jauntier vibe.
Can I say one of my favorite moments, maybe in any album we've done, is Jennifer Love Hewitt saying, play those funky keys, we're going to get funky, and then just the least funky keyboard solo. Let's listen to this now. Ooh, funky. We're going to get funky. I will say, particularly when we're coming to the end and freeing ourselves of this album, look, there's nothing you're really missing from the back end of this. A bizarre cover of Baby, I Will Want You, which is very, very strange to have done. But other than that, this song, Free to Be a Woman, I reckon is up there with Let's Go Bang straight into what is our, what makes the Vanity Project podcast playlist.
Absolutely. They are, unfortunately, real bops with weird subject matter. But, you know, you'll enjoy listening to them, I think. The playlist, truly, if you are listening to it, is cursed and will ruin your algorithm. But why not roll the dice, you know? Life is for the living, I say. So you can check that out. That's Vanity Project Podcast Playlist.
Easy to say, easy to remember. That is, though, like, I've got to say, like, if you just heard Let's Go Bang and Free to Be a Woman, you're like, this is a fucking edgy, like, early 90s, this is an edgy album, this is fun, this is daring, hell yeah, Jennifer 100%. Love Hewitt, you've done it.
And, James, is that what the wider public and music critics thought?
I don't know, is it?
No, it's not. It didn't do as brilliantly as some of her other albums have done. In fact, some of her other albums were, like, enormous in Japan and also Australia.
Yeah, no, we went wild for Bare Naked. Bare Naked went wild off
for it. Yeah. So, no, this one, like, it didn't chart. It was supposed to have, like, a whole big promotional tour, which got cancelled, and so the whole release strategy changed.
When things went badly enough that you didn't bother making the dance move for your big dance single that is the title of the album, I guess it didn't go great.
Yeah, we had a little more follow through.
She puts out another album the next year. It's not like they go, okay, this was a disaster, let's put this on ice for a while. She has another album the next year.
She's prolific. Look, it's not about the reception of the album, but it is a fun little piece of trivia. In fact, I'm going to start with a question for you, James, and for our listeners. Which act is the most commercially successful pop duo in history?
Pop duo in history worldwide.
Yep. Or at least this was accurate according to the trivia host that told me this at a pub quiz last year. Take it up with him.
What sells everywhere? You know, Dolly and Keddie come to mind.
It's a good guess. It's a good guess. My guess was Simon and Garfunkel, although I don't know if they're strictly pop. But yeah, it's Hall & Oates. Hall & Oates. Why am I bringing this up, James? Great question. So glad you asked. Paul Pesco, who plays electric guitar for this album, was the musical director for Hall & Oates. And I'm like, no wonder the arrangements are so great. There's a lot of really good musicians involved in the making of this album.
Oh, did you know also, I used to know this guy, right, who he would go to, so there's areas where you get, like it's where Uncle Toby sources all their stuff from, and he would be the transport for them. And he was also Hall & Oates. Brady, I'm a dad now.
My God.
Was this album a mistake? Hall & Oates, everybody. He was hauling oats. Was this album a mistake?
Nah. It's fun to listen to. Like, I had a good enough time. It's not had a major influence on her career, I don't think. It didn't seem to slow her down. I enjoyed it. Having said that, I don't think I'll listen to it again. I'm a strong on the fence with this one. What do you think, James?
Yeah, I think mistake's too strong a word. I think that, is it a mistake to have a glass of water? No, it's just not interesting. Like, it's vaguely good for you, but it's not interesting. Like, this is...
How dare you? That's my favourite drink.
I think that this is nothing to me. The second this recording stops, I will forget it ever existed, which is a problem because I have to edit it.
That is a problem. This is why this episode will never be heard by anybody else. Hey, I think that brings us to the end of this week's episode then. James, final thoughts, feelings, dad jokes about oats that you want to share?
Hall & Oates, everybody. So, transporting, and you can, if you go back and listen, you can find the part of the joke where I'm like, do people grow oats? Well, that gives away the joke. Where do oats come from? So I didn't know, and I had to make it about Uncle Toby's. But, you know, I feel we got there. I feel everyone got what they wanted out of this.
You know what's upsetting is that I feel like I always start the podcast poorly, but you find that so funny you won't start it. Like, and I every week I'm like, this week I'm going to nail it, and then I panic. If anyone stayed with us this long, I feel like we always end the episode in this way too, where James will make some sort of silly joke, but my ridiculousness is just displayed up front and yours is hidden 45 minutes into the episode.
Yeah, it's because the trick we have is I lose interest at the same time the audience does. We'll be back next week. Thank you all for listening. Like and review and do all the shit that you see, this is it. This is where I'm like, oh, I have
this
to go.
This is why
the
we should swap.
Script.
I have no issue asking people to do that, and you would be great at introducing the podcast. Anyway, we love you. Thanks for listening. You're the best. Bye.